Against the Grain with Teal Hardeman, Raza Siddiqui, coming at you live on this beautiful Sunday. We've got a lot to talk about today. Teal, we're entering into the Thanksgiving season, but we got to keep it real, man. We always do. We got to talk about what's going on these streets. Tell me, what's going to be the topic today? I know we got a lot going on, a lot to discuss.
Well, today we have a lot of people that plan to call in to take on this topic of analyzing police brutality and excessive force, because, you know, there are always two sides to every story. So we have people calling in that's going to weigh in on the subject matter from both points of view, which I think is pretty good. Clyde McLemore, the president of Black Lives Matter Lake County, he's in Jacksonville, Florida right now. He will be joining us as our guest today to kind of talk a little bit about some of the current cases of what's going on throughout the nation.
I think it's very important for our audience to also know that you can call in, interact too. Hopefully we can all learn something. You can call in at 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. Obviously, it's been very well documented what happened in Kenosha. There's a lot going on with Jacob Blake, and Kyle Rittenhouse was actually let go on bond just a few days ago. So I think this is very kind of timely to talk about what's going on and how people are going to react to this.
Well, you know, the young man was successfully able to post a $2 million bond to be released from prison, but he's saying it was all self-defense for him. Now, Clyde McLemore was down there in Kenosha. He was in Kenosha, Wisconsin, when Cal shot and, you know, killed them two young men during a protest there. So we may even talk about that a little bit, but I think there was one of the actors that helped Cal raise the money, Adam Schroeder from one of the shows from the past, one of the actors. I saw it in the news.
Rick Schroeder, right?
Rick Schroeder, my father.
Silver Spoon.
Silver Spoon.
It's about what it takes to raise $2 million like that, huh?
So what that means is that, what's that? You said Rick, right?
Rick Schroeder, I believe, is the name.
That means Rick had a silver spoon. That's what that means, you know. So they helped a young man raise bond. I mean, it's just tragic, you know, the two brothers that lost their lives up there. It's sad. We must do better here in America, and I'm hoping that everything will change. Now it's time to heal. All the races and everybody just need to come together in peace.
So I think it looks like, do we have Clyde on the line
right now?
Not
yet. We have another caller. Jim is on the line now, Brother Jim. Clyde will be calling in a few minutes.
Teal, actually just set it up. Tell us who is Clyde. Tell us about some of the work that you know him to do, just so people know who they'll be listening to.
Well, Clyde is the founder of Black Lives Matter Lake County, and he does a lot of work in Zion, North Chicago, Waukegan, and Beach Park area, Highland Park, you know, up there on the far Lake County, you know, area, so to speak. But not only that, Clyde is like the voice to be reckoned with in North Chicago when it comes down to the issues of police brutality and excessive force. But not only is he standing up when the police cross the line, Clyde is he's one of them guys. He's a serious community organizer, and he's bringing the community together on both ends. He has a relationship with the police and a relationship with the community. And see, a lot of people are confused when it comes down to, the protests against the police. It's not so much that people are against the police. What it comes down to, we are against police that cross the line, the thin line, and they commit an act of excessive force or police brutality. So Clyde has been around, Black Lives Matter Lake County has been around for about 2 or 3 years now, and the guy is doing remarkable work. He stepped up for the Jacob Blake family. For those who don't know, Jacob Blake was shot in the back 7 times while walking to his car in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And the list goes on and on. Clyde has traveled the entire United States, one of the foremost leading speakers on this subject matter right now. So that's his background pretty much. And he turned his life around many years ago as well.
Well, okay. Like you said, we have Jim on the line. Jim, you're on with Teal Hardeman, Raza Siddiqui. I wanted to give you an opportunity. What's up, Jim?
Yes.
Hi, guys. How are you guys doing? You know, I'm 70 years old. I had my problems. I've had some terrible cops. They beat the heck out of me one day in a joint with my hands cupped behind my back. I was shot at by the cops, but I've seen some good cops, too, some good cops that... But my point being, we've been these SWAT teams, these military arms of the police, with the weapons and so on and so forth, it's just getting out of control. I think that the more psychological exams and how to deal with human beings at a level that where they can mitigate confrontation. And you guys have a good afternoon. Stay safe. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Well, you know, what Jim is saying is valuable, because there should come a time when you want to try to mitigate all situations and de-escalate situations. That's what it's about. So, you know, it was once said that police officers need they need a lot more cultural sensitivity training, so to speak. You know, so that's something that really, really needs to be examined a little bit more so they can get it right. Because a lot of the people that are being shot and killed, some of them people may have some mental health issues. And that's happened a few times, and where the police probably could have de-escalated in a different type of way. And what's really, so Brother Clyde is on the line now, but I want to say this as well. But what it comes down to, I've seen video footage of how the police de-escalate when it comes to other nationalities, but they do not de-escalate when it comes to black people. That's crazy.
Yeah, I got to ask you this, because I know you do a lot of work on the South Side, the West Side. Yes. I got to ask you, do you think having police officers who are part of the community actually would help the situation? I know a lot of times we hear about the guys who are patrolling maybe on the South Side and the West Side might live on the North Side.
Right.
Do you think having people from the community patrolling the community helps at all, or...
Yeah, I think it helps a lot to have somebody that understands the people in the community. And that's what it really should come down to, actually, because if you have people that are far removed from knowing anything about some of the systemic issues that take place in some of the communities of color in any way, and then like people living in extreme poverty, the signs of mental health illness, the signs of looking at if a person is dangerous or not. I mean, it's hard to really say, but with a real seasoned police officer that understands the community that the person is working in, it might be helpful for that police officer. So there's no margin for error then. There was a young guy that was shot, and then we'll take the calls here. This what happened. A young guy was shot on the South Side of Chicago about 2 years ago. His last name was Augustus, right?
Okay.
He had a FOID card, but he didn't have a concealed carry card. So he was reaching in his pocket to show them his FOID card information, and he was shot and killed because the police noticed he had a gun on his hip. In a case. So they didn't have to kill the guy. He was shot and killed, but they say they were training. They were out there training. He didn't pull the gun on nobody, but he was shot and killed.
So like you said, we have Clyde on the phone. We also want to invite all of our listeners to call in. You're going to want to dialogue with us because this is going to be an issue we really need to have some discussion on. 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. Clyde, you're on with Teo Hardiman, Raza Siddiqui.
Yes, Brother Clyde, you're on the air. Clyde?
How you doing? How you doing, T.O.?
Doing good. I want to take you.
I'm in Florida right now, dealing with a situation right now where a young 18-year-old was shot 35 times.
Yes.
You know, so I'm down here in Florida dealing with that situation. This young man, they're trying to say he committed suicide.
Yes. Did he commit suicide by shooting himself 33 times? I would like to know.
Well, they said the first shot was this what they're saying. They're saying that he had a gun in the car.
Okay.
They said he wouldn't get out the car, and he grabbed the gun and shot himself.
All right.
Clyde, I got to ask you a question real quick. You were up in Lake County. You had a press conference with Rainbow Push as well, if I remember. This keeps happening.
Yeah.
You always have to be up there and kind of bring light to what's going on. What can we do systematically to change the way that this is going? I mean, you're reacting to what's happening in Lake County. You're going down to Florida to try to bring some light on this. How do we stop shining a light but really make some reforms that are going to change the way this happens so you don't have to go to these places so that we can start the conversation, take it to the next level, and start creating some of these changes? What do you think are part of the process that we need to do as a community?
Well, I think black and brown death has become big money.
Okay.
Because the families get paid, the lawyers get paid, the activists get paid, the funeral homes get paid.
Wow.
Everybody get money, but nobody is trying to stop this. We need laws. We need laws that will de-escalate the situation with police officers.
That's good.
That's what we need. We need some laws that would say, hey, if you shoot somebody, that you are no longer a police officer. There's a bill that's been introduced called the it's a bill just came out, 5800, and this bill is saying that, you know, look, to be a police officer, it don't take much. All you need is a high school diploma. You have to have more training to be
a fireman or something.
You to be a fireman, a beautician, just a barber. You know, you got to have more training.
Okay.
So if a police officer can have this training that's needed, and all these training, these classes that's needed, if they would have this, they have to have like a doctorate, not a doctorate, but
at least a bachelor's degree, you would say.
Yeah, some kind of degree.
Okay.
To become a police officer.
Well, Clyde, I got to say this. I mean, there are a lot of good officers, like we were talking about before. Obviously, there comes down to a time when training has to take precedence, right? You could have a doctoral degree. You could have a bachelor's. These guys are making life and death decisions in a matter of moments, whatever their education is, right? Whatever, wherever they're coming from. How do we increase that training? How do we make sure they're responsive? And how do we make sure that they don't view certain people in the community as a threat, so they react differently when they see a certain person maybe flinching or reaching into his pocket than they do someone from the other segment? What kind of investment do we need to do, whether it's in training, whether it's in getting people from the community to be patrolling that community? What is the solution that we can offer to make sure that people are moving in the right direction for the betterment of police relations with the community?
Good question.
Well, my suggestion would be, with the training, that once they get these licenses to become a police officer, and then once they get these licenses, that they will be able to, they could be fired from it. See, first of all, we got to get rid of qualified immunity.
Okay.
That is a big issue.
Break that down for me. Break it down for our audience, Clyde. Qualified immunity. What does that mean?
Qualified immunity means I was scared for my life.
Okay.
You know. And anything can make them scared for their life. They can be scared for their life because he was a black man with a hoodie on. They can be scared for my life because you told him to stop. He had his foot on the brakes, and he took his foot off the brake because he saw a gun in his face.
Yes,
and,
okay.
And the car moved a little bit because he didn't accelerate, and they started shooting.
Okay, got you covered. But, yeah.
You know, this is qualified immunity. So then they say, well, the car moved, that they qualified the shooting. So these are some of the things, and the police unions, they back that up. Now, on the second part of your question was that some of all officers are not bad. All officers are not bad, but the silence, the code of silence, you know, that makes it bad.
Okay. So now, Roger, what we have, our phone lines are lighting up here. And if you don't mind, I want to bring Dr. Latrice on. That's line three. She might have some questions for Clyde.
I think that's great. So, Paul, we will be able to go to one while keeping Clyde on, right? So,
yeah,
so let's
we'll
do
keep
that.
Him on. Yeah, without a doubt. Is Dr. Latrice on?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Dr. Latrice. I have Clyde Mecklemore is the guest speaker here on the show today, Against the Grain, with Chio Hardeman and Raza Siddiqui. So we're talking about analyzing police brutality and excessive force. Clyde is in Jacksonville, Florida right now. So, Dr. Latrice, what are your thoughts? How can we do better in this arena? Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounds like the GPS can definitely hear us.
Right, right. Okay. So how can we, what more should be done, Dr. Latrice? In Chicago, there have been the dissent decree, right, whatever the the consent decree is behind. It's like 70 benchmarks have not been met, 70 deadlines have not been met. What's going on?
Yes. Absolutely. That's one of the main problems. But the other thing is the FOP contract. We need to start examining those things because we can't expect the system to work for us that was never designed to work for us. So everyone keeps talking about criminal justice reform, but we must be real with ourselves and see if the system was not designed for black and brown people, we cannot expect it to work. So we can't say it's broken. What we need to do is it needs to be completely overhauled. So you're looking at whether you're going to abolish police, whether you're going to defund the police, or whether you believe in criminal justice reform. And I think there needs to be a meeting of the minds.
Okay.
People have to look at the statistics, the research, and the data to see what exactly is happening, because this is happening across the country in various municipalities. They have these FOP contracts that exempt them from being prosecuted and from being held accountable. So until we look at that from a legislative level, we can't even get to the grassroots part. Like Clyde just said, there are so many other layers of this that involve money.
Oh, good. So do you have any questions for Clyde, since we have him? He's in Jacksonville, Florida. I know you all have worked together on the front line on several occasions.
Yes.
Hi, Clyde. How are you?
How you doing, doctor?
I have a question. I'm well. I have a question for you. Just with your experience in the last two incidents that's happened in Kenosha and even in Waukegan, what would you say has been done to rectify those issues? One thing I have not noticed is I have not heard a strong call, even in the Jacob Blake case, to hold the officer accountable. So where do you think the breakdown has happened in that process?
Wow. Okay.
Well, the Jacob Blake case, I want to say this here. They've been kumbaya back to sleep. It's just nothing's being done. Nobody is doing anything. They haven't got any records. They haven't released anything. They've been kumbaya back to sleep. They brought in different organizations that came in and told them that, hey, we're going to keep them quiet. So that what happened. Right now, since I've been out of town, I understand Kyle Rittner, I've been out of prison.
Yeah, he's been released.
Out of jail.
On bond.
On a $2 billion bond that my pillar company put up his bond. So when I get back to Illinois, that's one of the things that I want to do is start a boycott against my pillow.
You say a pillow company put up his bond?
Yeah.
Yes, the guy that does my pillow, he's one of the he put most of the money up along with the actor Rick Schroeder.
Yeah, we talked about Rick a little earlier today. I messed his name up. But what's the name of the show?
Silver Spoons.
Silver Spoons. Well, you know, Rick has a silver spoon, Dr. Patrice.
One of my favorite shows growing up. I'm just so disappointed right now.
How symbolic is that, right? Everything that stood for the beauty of wealth has turned into really...
That's right.
Again, it just shows that system that certain people have access to. Yeah. I heard even the
Absolutely.
Fund to try to raise his for his defense has hit a couple million people. And that speaks, I think, to a deeper discussion that we need to address
Absolutely.
About who are these people.
And then what people need to know, Clyde and
Absolutely.
Dr. Latrice, before we take some more calls, the two guys he killed, those are some of our white brothers up there that were standing up, you know, against injustice, you know, standing up in the fight for all people, so to speak. But, you know, Black Lives Matter for the movement. But that's really outrageous for this guy that committed an act, in my opinion anyway, of first-degree murder. Because in my mind, I researched it, I studied it. He came to Kenosha, Wisconsin, with the mindset that he was supposed to do something. And he ended up taking the lives of two white brothers that were really out there working hard for the people, in my opinion, Dr. Latrice and Clyde.
Dr. Latrice and Clyde, and we do actually want to talk about that a little bit. We got to cut to a commercial break real quick. But I think, Tio, that's a great point that these were allies who were standing up for the rights of people. And I do want to talk about what we can do right after these commercial breaks.
We'll take a quick commercial break, then we get right back to Dr. Latrice and Clyde and the other callers, Mark and Maria, hanging there with us. Thank you.
The minority groups in America are severely affected by COVID-19 due to healthcare and economic inequities. Chicago, now it's your time to make a difference in your community and join the fight against this global pandemic. Loretto Hospital, in partnership with Affinity Health, are seeking healthy volunteers to find a potential COVID-19 vaccine. Interested participants can call 877-L-TRIALS or visit chicagocovidvaccine.com to learn more.
Megan Financial is an independent retirement and financial services firm dedicated to the working men and women of organized labor. Megan provides straightforward, custom-fit financial advice and specializes in defined benefit and defined contribution pension plans, as well as participant and retiree health and welfare benefits. Megan Financial has the knowledge and experience to navigate the union member through all phases of life. Call 708-444-1090.
Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, a broker-dealer and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Office location at 5321 South 94th Avenue, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
Ever wonder about the story behind the story? Who are the people you watch delivering the news, filming the scenes, and putting pen to paper to tell the story you read in your morning paper? Tune in to Media Essential Workers on Facebook and YouTube to find out. With constant changes in the Chicago media landscape, one reliable source keeps track of the people bringing you the stories. Media Essential Workers, the premier live stream telling the story of the storytellers. Sunday nights at 7, Like, subscribe, and follow Media Essential Workers to find out about special shows during the week. Hosted by Raza Siddiqui, Media Essential Workers gets the story of the storytellers.
Against the grain, Teo Hardiman, Raza Siddiqui. We got a bunch of callers waiting. Just want to introduce you to the topic. We're talking about the relationship between police and community and how they can work together better, because what's been happening so far just really doesn't seem to be working out for too many people in general. Let's have that discussion. Let's dialogue. Let's see what we can do. We have on the call with us Clyde, Black Lives Matter, yes. Lake County. We also are continuing the discussion with Dr. LaTrice. And we got a couple other callers, Maria, Jim, waiting to get on. We're going to get to you real quick. But, yeah. Teo, let's restart this conversation.
We'll go right forward here. Now, Dr. LaTrice and Clyde, so I plan to ask you the devil's advocate question here, because I've been educated myself on this topic, so don't take it personal now, right? So when people say, like, as always, you know, they say Black Lives Matter, right? And we always stand up against the police shooting and killing somebody in the black community. Now, once again, what about the black people killing each other? I'm an African-American man. What about our people killing one another? We just had a lot of gun violence in Chicago. We over 700 homicides this year in Chicago. Over 80% of the homicides occur in the African-American community. 3,600 people shot in Chicago as of today. So what's your response? Because we need to clear that up, because a lot of people don't understand why it's so important to tackle this issue of police brutality and excessive force, and they're separate issues. Okay, Clyde or Dr. LaTrice can respond.
Okay, I'm going to go first.
Ladies first, Clyde.
Ladies first.
Clyde's on that long distance call, though.
Ladies
first, right. Dr. LaTrice, let's go. What do you think?
So I was going to say that when I'm presented with that question, I have been over the past few years, because, of course, that's been highlighted, what's been taking place in different communities. But we have to also look at the history of how we've been placed in communities to be put into those intracommunal violence type situations.
Okay.
I am not going to label this a black on black crime issue like the world or the media may portray it as.
Yes.
What I'm going to say is it's unresolved issues that have grassroots problems that go back decades. And so if we talk about people not being able to move out of a specific community or get a job because they live in a certain zip code, or being placed in a certain community so that they can be housed and you know, treated as if they were cattle, we have to think about all of these things started a long time ago. So when we talk about drugs and guns and violence in the community, a lot of that's being perpetuated in those communities, and it's saturated. And just over time, it's being highlighted more and more, because we're in the middle of a pandemic. We see more about what's going on now in communities than we ever have, but it's because there's been a long period of idle time for people to actually focus on things.
That's cool. Why
I think this other issue of police brutality has become something that has really exploded into a massive conversation.
Teo, you frequently talk about the disinvestment in community and how the community sometimes don't get the same chance as other people do. For instance, with marijuana, the investment in getting licenses for dispensaries in black communities to empower the community. I think this might be viewed as some of that grassroots systematic disenfranchisement of the institutions down there.
Well, it really makes no sense.
Absolutely.
Because in Chicago, we don't, to this day, we don't have one African-American-owned marijuana dispensary, recreational marijuana. And they've already made $800 million this year already. So
someone's making money.
Somebody's making money. That's the reason why I was pushing for peddler's license for the young brothers and sisters in the hood. You know what I mean, Dr. LaTrice? But with that being said, this brother, if you don't mind, we got brother Mark has been holding for 17 minutes. And maybe Clyde, Mark, he's talking about Jacob Blake, so maybe he can ask Clyde or Dr. LaTrice a question, if you don't mind. Can we work that out? Brother Mark?
Mark, yeah, that's Mark.
Do you want to talk about Jacob Blake if you have a question for Dr. LaTrice or Brother Clyde McLemore?
Yeah, I would agree that I want to agree. I want to disagree.
Yes.
I want to almost fully agree, and I want to comment. And
don't be afraid to go against the grain.
That's right.
That's what we're here for.
You know, I think it was Clyde, I'm sorry, I got a bad connection. But I think he's right that, you know, I don't know if I got this wrong, or what he was talking about is police need a basic level of education.
Yes.
For modern policing. I mean, and it's not about training after they're hired. They shouldn't be hired unless they at least achieve a certain level of understanding of what they're getting into. Am I wrong about that, or is that what he was implying?
Oh, yeah. Clyde can answer that question.
That's simply what I was implying to. But then what about the police that's already working? They're going to be grandfathered in. So then all of them need to go through that training. See, they're going to be grandfathered in that's already working. We're talking about this law for the new police officers that's coming in, that before they even come in, they already had this training. It's like a certificate. Like if you're doing construction. If you're doing construction, you got to go through certain classes
yes.
to get a, to, you know, to even be a flagger, to stand up there with a flag. You got to go
that's
through a class to get that. Yeah.
That's what I thought he meant. That's number one. And getting rid of that qualified immunity, number two. So, I mean, he's hitting all the right stuff. You know, in fairness to the conversation, though, to say that Jacob was walking to his car and was, and I'll say he was fatally shot. God bless him, he lived. But he was fatally shot.
Without a doubt.
Clearly.
Yeah.
And that was wrong, but, you know, he could have lived. He had his life in his own hands, too. But it goes back to what you said. Because I studied that case pretty closely, and I'm glad you're familiar. So there's three cops. Now, one of them's wrestling on the ground, and he's trying to do his job, secure Jacob. He's going to get arrested. But he was not able to secure Jacob. Now you got a second experienced officer right there on top of the situation. But he would have failed that class because he already had his hand on his gun, pointing his gun at Jacob. So he can't assist in taking down Jacob if he's got one hand on his gun. He's got to, if he has gun training, he's got to take care of that gun.
Well, let me ask you a question, Mark, because I'm well known to being the devil's advocate. Let me say to you in all positivity, what could the officers have done different with Jacob Blake, Mark, from your point of view? How could they have handled that situation? Jacob was not a threat. Let's make that clear. What do you think they should have did different there?
Well, I was just saying that there's three cops. One's wrestling him, and he loses a wrestling match.
Okay.
But while they're on the ground, an experienced officer, instead of helping, he's pulled out his gun already. So that's the problem.
Okay.
He went to shoot first mentality, which I would agree with you. Then they were at a very inexperienced, a rookie woman right next to him, and she follows the lead of the other cop. And so she pulls her gun. So Jacob Blake is on the ground. He's fighting with one cop, and he's got two guns pointed at him already.
Mm.
So now when he gets away, and the one cop who had not pulled out his gun yet, the first thing he does, now he's pissed, and there's a rule, a policy within the police that pissed off guy is not supposed to take the guy down. You're supposed to keep him out of it.
Okay.
But no, he's the first guy to get to him. So that's wrong. So the other two are too lazy. They're on their feet, and they can't get to him. The guy who's got to scramble to his feet is the one who gets to Jacob Blake.
Okay.
And anyway, so
Mark,
then,
can I say something, Mark?
Yeah.
Mark, first of all, I want to tell you that Jacob Blake wasn't being arrested. Jacob Blake showed up on the scene to break up a fight between two girls. He walked away from the police. He should have never, if they wanted to talk to him or anything like that, they let him get to his car. They allowed him to get the car. He was not being arrested.
Okay.
He just was going. So I wanted to say that to him. He was not being arrested.
I mean, the video is proof. I mean, the video, he was wrestling. He got up from the ground, and he went to his car door. But I want to agree with you. I mean, I think it's the police totally at fault. So there's three cops. Two of them got their guns pointed at him. The only one who's trying to do his job by securing Jacob without a gun, he's the last one to get up off the ground, but he's the first one to reach for Jacob. And now he just lost the wrestling match. And instead of having his other cops help him, now he's got one hand with a gun in it, and the other, and he can't take down Jacob with one hand. So the whole thing is police training.
Right on.
The whole problem there is police training.
All right, Mark, we want to thank you for your call. It makes a lot of sense. Training is number one for the police out here.
I don't think any of us disagree on the fact that training is number one. I think we can also all agree none of these police officers went to work that day thinking they get themselves in this situation or foresaw it coming. So absolutely, to put them in a better suited situation, to give them that training, to be able to interact so they can have this sort of an engagement, it can turn out that they can do what they need to do without a life being lost, without a gun being fired, and for everyone to go home, I think is vitally important. And how we reach that level, how we we attain that training is something we really have to have an honest discussion upon. Jim from Elgin, you're on with Teo Hardeman and Raza Siddiqui.
Yeah, we'll get to Maria right after Jim. If you have any questions, Jim, for Clyde or Dr. Latrice, you know, if you have any questions, just let them know. All right, Jim.
Well, I just want to say that the incident in Kenosha, you know, this guy, there's with all these cameras, they showed what happened. The guy was hit up behind the head with a skateboard. The other guy's getting ready to shoot him, and he shot back at him, so it was self-defense.
The guy in Kenosha, so you're saying it was self-defense because he was going to get hit in the head with a skateboard. Do you think he should have?
He was in that. That's why he was on the ground.
Can I say something on that?
This is Dr. Latrice. I disagree.
Dr. Latrice, why don't you tell us why you disagree?
Now, let Dr. Latrice, she says she disagrees.
Yes,
we'll get you, Clyde.
Yes, I just want to say I respectfully disagree because that situation that took place, first of all, the gun was a threat in and of itself. There should not have been a 17-year-old out there with a gun anyway, and all day he paraded up and down the street. So they were already threatened.
Well, he was also protecting people's property. Rioting on the street is not peaceful.
He had no right to protect people's property. That was not his job.
Of course he did.
He went out there with
his gun.
How in the world could it be his job, and he's 17? He's not even in the state he lives in, so that's number one. Number two,
what does it matter?
The right to carry a weapon. Oh, it definitely matters.
Because it's a legal right.
State to protect someone's property.
Can I say this here?
Oh, no, see, that's where we disagree at.
That's good. We want to thank Jim for calling. Because
we agree with people destroying property.
Now, we want different points of view, so this is good. I appreciate Dr. Latrice. Answer there, and Jim, we understand where you're coming from to a degree, because I think it was first degree murder personally, because Clyde was right there on location. Let's hear from Brother Clyde.
All right, I want to say something. Now, what you saw on that video where somebody hit him with a skateboard, you saw something true. But check this out. He shot the first man who was a medic. He shot him first. And then the guy with the skateboard was trying to protect him and take the gun from him. That's why he hit him with the skateboard. And that's why he had already killed somebody. He had already killed somebody. So you got half the tape. I was there on the scene.
Yes.
The guy who had the skateboard was out there all day. I talked to Kyle Rittenau that at 5 o'clock that afternoon.
Wow.
He was standing there with his AR-15 when we walked past him, and I stopped as I was leading the march and asked him, did he want to participate in a nonviolent march? And he told me, no, he was there to protect buildings. I said, you here to protect buildings or protect brick and mortar over human life? And he told me, yeah, we got into a confrontation. Why he had that AR-15? But everybody moved me. You know, they moved me out the way. I was not scared of Kyle, you know.
Okay.
So that was not true about somebody just came up to him to hit him with a skateboard. He had already killed somebody.
Got it. So, yeah, this is a real good conversation. I hate Jim hung up because we wanted to hear from Jim. It's always good to have both points of view, but there's no excuse for first degree.
Yes. There is a whole video showing what Clyde is saying happened.
Okay, got you. All righty, so you want to take Maria? I want to get Maria on?
Yeah, let's get Maria on and continue this conversation. You're on with Teo Hardeman, Raza Siddiqui, also joined by Clyde and Dr. Latrice.
Okay, Maria.
Hi, everyone. This is Maria.
Hi.
I just wanted to make several points. I agree with the doctor regarding the 17-year-old who unlawfully had that rifle on his person. He was lived in Illinois, goes over to Wisconsin to protect buildings from destruction, which to me doesn't make any sense. Who appointed him to do that, okay? So he's walking around with this huge rifle, you know, acting bad, and he's a 17-year-old, so he had no business carrying that rifle.
Okay.
He had already shot somebody, I think, at a gas station when people were saying, hey, he has a rifle, he shot somebody. So people were racing after him to get the rifle away from him because they feared that he will kill somebody else. So the guy used whatever he had, which was a skateboard, to hit him on the head, which, by the way, is not as dangerous as a rifle.
Exactly.
So then what does the kid does? Oh, self-defense. So he shoots the medic, then he shoots the guy who had the skateboard, and then very quietly swayed away with his rifle and got transported back to Illinois. So for me, I'm sorry, this kid needs to be adjudicated accordingly. Okay.
Well, I cannot even believe when he basically let him know that he shot somebody. People are saying he shot somebody, that he was able to leave that scene and make it back to Illinois. I mean, right there when they had identified to the police officers what had happened. That's what I found most shocking, was after the fact, when he's approaching the police.
Doesn't surprise me. He was a white kid with a rifle. That's the reality. That's reality. Okay.
He was deputized by the sheriff earlier.
What's that, Maria? Go ahead, yes. Maria. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I have a few comments. Earlier, someone had said that it would be great to have police officers that live in the community and work in that community. I mean, there's some pluses and some cons with that, pros and cons, okay? Here's the thing. Sometimes some of the police officers that grow up in a certain neighborhood may be harder on the people than actual other cops that are not from the area. Okay?
That's kind of deep, Maria. Let me say this real quick, Maria, if you don't mind. This is the problem.
Sure.
I just try not to get caught up in the race thing myself because I love all human beings, but there's a preponderance of evidence that 9 times out of 10, it's a white officer that shoots and kills a black person across America on any given day in America. So I hear what you're saying, and I know some of my own people might be harder on our own people. I got you on that. But the data does not dictate back up the fact that the black officers are killing black folks. Maybe Cloud or Dr. Latrice can help me out with that, because I don't see no data, because I researched that data and nothing comes up.
Oh, I'm not saying that they're shooting folks. I'm not saying that.
I'm just saying
that they tend to be harder. And I don't know if it's because of their experience. They can figure out immediately what the situation is.
Okay.
But the also thing that helps is these police officers aren't social workers. And let me tell you, I met some cops that say, I'm not going to cuddle a criminal. Okay? So that's a certain mindset that they have. That they don't understand, or maybe they do understand, that sometimes you're going to need to use additional education and maybe even have social workers on the force, okay, to deal with people that have mental illness. And unfortunately, many people with mental illness have fallen through the cracks.
Exactly.
They got rid of a lot of the mental health facilities. And this happened like over a 30-year period. So they need to address that, okay, police officers are not perfect. They're human beings. I have law enforcement relatives. There's a lot of great cops out there. I'm not saying that they're not. But there are a few bad apples. And yes, there's that silence. But a lot of it is in fear, too, because they can go after their family if they talk or rat on their fellow cops. So it's kind of a vicious situation. So it really needs to be studied. There needs to be everybody from top to bottom needs to be educated. They need
Maria, we thank you for joining us. We got to cut to a commercial break right now. We're having a very engaging conversation about relationship between police and community and how we can get on to better that relationship. We invite you to call up and ask questions to our guest here. That number is 773-763-9278, 773-763-9278. We'll be back right after these commercials.
Yes. All right.
Are you interested in being one of the first participants in a COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial in Chicago? Affinity Health is currently seeking healthy volunteers who may be eligible for a COVID-19 investigational vaccine study. This will take place at the Loretto Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. We are looking for people who work as teachers, factory workers, retail workers, or anyone exposed to many people during their workday. Visit chicagocovidvaccine.com or call 877-L-TRIALS to learn more. That's 877-587-4257.
Megan Financial is an independent retirement and financial services firm dedicated to the working men and women of organized labor. Megan provides straightforward, custom-fit financial advice and specializes in defined benefit and defined contribution pension plans, as well as participant and retiree health and welfare benefits. Megan Financial has the knowledge and experience to navigate the union member through all phases of life. Call 708-444-1090.
Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC. Member FINRA, SIPC. A broker-dealer and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Office location at 5321 South 94th Avenue, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
Ever wonder about the story behind the story? Who are the people you watch delivering the news, filming the scenes, and putting pen to paper to tell the story you read in your morning paper? Tune in to Media Essential Workers on Facebook and YouTube to find out. With constant changes in the Chicago media landscape, one reliable source keeps track of the people bringing you the stories. Media Essential Workers, the premier live stream telling the story of the storytellers. Sunday nights at 7. Like, subscribe, and follow Media Essential Workers to find out about special shows during the week. Hosted by Raza Siddiqui, Media Essential Workers gets the story of the storytellers.
All right, we're back against the grain with T.O., Mr. Ceasefire Hardeman, and Raza Siddiqui here. So, Dr. Latrice, before I let you go, and Brother Clyde, I want you to hang in there with us. We got a caller coming in a minute. We're going to get to Rich. But, Dr. Latrice, what kind of progress has been made that you can see? Is there any empirical data out there, any type of, Dr. Latrice, any type of evidence, any type of progress? What kind of progress has been made in the movement when it comes to addressing it?
Professor Teo, that has been made is there is now an intentional conversation. I think that's as far as that we've gotten, that people recognize that we need to have a real conversation. I do think that once we come together, and we should come together and unify no matter what our thoughts are, if the only way we can invoke some sort of change to this system is by talking about the issues that we see from our different perspectives and merge those together to try to create some sort of collaborative effort of change. And so okay. I think that being in a pandemic has put us in a position where we had to focus on what was taking place. And I actually think it's a good thing that people are now ignited to join the conversation. So I think that's the progress that's been made thus far.
That's amazing. I want to thank you for, you know, taking some time out of your Sunday, early evening on Sunday to call in, Dr. Latrice. Appreciate you very much, okay?
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you so much.
We got Rich waiting.
Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay, Dr. Latrice.
You as well. And Rich, you're on with Teo Hardeman, Raza Siddiqui, and Clyde.
Yep.
How you doing? Hey, the one thing I understand, you know, is I'm a 58-year-old man, and my mother always told me, when the police question you or anything, you show them the respect. I mean, they have a gun and everything. And a lot of things that I've seen, I mean, not in all cases, when these people resist arrest, you know, I mean, when they start fighting with the police, I mean, it comes down to the simple thing. If you don't comply, you could die. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't do any good to fight them. And, you listen to what the officers got to say.
Yeah, let's see what Clyde has to say about that. Well, Clyde, why don't you respond to Brother Rich?
Well, everybody that's getting shot and killed by the police is not always fighting with the police. We got people that just have a traffic stop and get shot. What happened in Waukegan? They wasn't fighting with the police. Matter of fact, they were sitting outside smoking a cigarette because they didn't want to smoke inside. There's not always altercations. You know, they use qualified immunity. I was scared for my life after they shoot someone.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know there's different. There's a white standard and a black standard.
Exactly.
Like,
right.
You know, they've always told you guys you got to be twice as nice as the white guy has to be. You know, I understand that.
Let me tell you about a case. Here's a case in East Point, Georgia. His name is Jamari Robinson.
Yes.
He was shot 76 times on a wrongful warrant. They didn't even want him.
Yeah.
They kicked in the door and shot this man 76 times, 76 bullets. They shot 100 and something, but 76 bullets hit into his body.
Wow.
He was the guy they wanted.
That's a lot of things with the gangs and everything. It's usually the innocent person that gets shot out there on the streets nowadays. It's not the guys that they're looking for. It is, you know, it's an innocent bystander. It's a child. It's a mother, you know, and it's the guns have got to stop.
Yeah, Rich, I thank you for your call as well, because what Clyde just talked about, it reminds me of the assassination of Fred Hampton Sr., you know, and Mark Clark, you know, members of the Black Panther Party, because way back then they shot in the house about almost 300 some times, you know, to assassinate that young man and Mark Clark while his pregnant wife was in the house as well. Clyde, that's pretty tough. I really pray for that family. So, Rich, you brought up a pretty good, train of thought process when it comes down to, you know, like, for example, me being an African American man, I have to always say that, right? So this what happens is that, like I said, it's a black standard and a white standard most of the time, even though if we comply. See, there's a law in the books. It's called resisting arrest law. You will be arrested for resisting arrest even if the arrest is unlawful. And there's too much of a history. Once again, I use the word preponderance of evidence of wrongful convictions, wrongful arrests for African-American men in particular. So it's hard, really, when you think about all the data that's out there that backs up what we're talking about, Rich, if you know what I mean. You hear me, Rich?
Thank you for your time, guys.
Thank you, brother. So, yeah, go ahead, Brother Raza.
Oh, appreciate it. No, I was just going to say, love having these different perspectives calling in, because, again, this is how we get the dialogue going, not by being in our echo chambers, being in a silo of thought, but being able to have this engagement and dialogue and try to see where everyone's coming from. I know, Tio, from your work, you're very much on the streets. You have the pulse of a lot of this community. What are you hearing?
Well, you know, we need to make more progress, you know, like, say, the consent decree, right? Did I say it right?
The consent decree, right.
Yeah. They've missed 70 benchmarks, Clyde, in Chicago. It makes no sense. And the people they have overseeing the dissent decree, those people did not hit the streets with us and rally in protest. They should have hired some people to oversee that process that comes from the activist community, Clyde, if you know what I mean. So I just have another question for Clyde. Also, Clyde, what kind of progress has been made in Lake County, if any? What are you seeing in Lake County, where you're the president of Black Lives Matter Lake County, Clyde?
Well, actually, I've seen little progress, and I've seen a lot of no progress. We got certain police stations that are actually working with Black Lives Matter.
Okay.
But we're not asking for defunding the police. We're asking for reallocating the funds. There's certain ways that they can reallocate the funds. You take a city like North Chicago. North Chicago don't have a grocery store, but they just got a $150,000 grant for their police department.
Got it.
You know, and that could have been reallocated in some kind of way. Now, when we had the shooting of Marcellus Annette and Tafari Williams, we was able to get the police fired within 2 days, because every time we do a protest, we try to come with a demand. So the first demand was that we wanted this police officer to be off administration leave, and he was fired in 2 days. Then our second one was that we asked for the DOJ to come in, because we didn't want the state police and police investigating police. And what happened on that was that we got the FBI. We satisfied. We compromised with that, because the FBI is from Chicago. They're not from Lake County. They don't know. They're police investigating police, but they're a little bit higher up. They have no ties to Lake County. So now we're asking for a special prosecutor to come in. But however, due to the election, that we was able to get a new prosecutor due to the election. And we just want to see how things are playing out. We was able to keep that city from no rioting. We was able to keep a nonviolent protest to get our demands.
That's powerful. Okay. All right, Clyde. Appreciate you, Brother Raza.
So we're seeing a little progress, but we still haven't, you know, gotten all the progress that we're looking for.
Okay, understood.
Well, we appreciate you calling in and sharing some of your thoughts with us, Clyde, and also being able to share and dialogue with the callers that we had in. I think, Tio, it gives us at least a frame by which we can continue this examination. I know you're on the streets, Clyde's on the streets. A lot of people are out there identifying the problem and working towards a solution. It's always more elusive than you think, right? Because it's not just the black experience, the white experience. It's not just two Americas. There's thousands of Americas. There's different perspectives as to how people view these interactions. and having your pulse in the community. I know you've talked to people. You've seen the frustrations. You understand it from both sides. I think what we can do is have this dialogue, have this conversation, and at least get those thoughts out there.
Because yeah, I think it's a ball of confusion, very complicated. What'd you say, Brother Clyde?
I wanted to tell your audience about this here that's going on here in Jacksonville, Florida, in the state of Florida. The governor just put up a bill that if anybody protested, because it's an open carry state.
Okay.
And anybody protesting, that if you think that they're going to do any harm to a building or do any looting, anything, you can shoot to kill.
Wow.
This is a that's bill that the governor just instituted. Mm.
Yeah,
so
whatever.
We had a rally yesterday.
Okay.
But if we just had a rally yesterday about that, and I was one of the speakers on that, that we can't have that because I don't like open carry anyway. But on behalf that Florida is an open carry state, now they want to start killing you if you practice your constitutional right.
Okay, Brother Clyde, but we want to thank you for your time calling from Jacksonville. We plan to take that discussion to a high level, too, maybe in the future, you know, on another show. But what happened to rubber bullets, Brother Raza?
I mean, there was talk about that early on,
yes,
and for a long time. We got to revisit that. But I think this is the beginning of a series of engagements we'll have on this topic. This is discussion that we really have. And it was intense, right?
Yes.
We're headed into a holiday season, but we got to remember that it's real on the streets, and we gotta remind people what's going on, what the greater picture is, and somehow foster an environment where we can be tolerant of each other and learn to get along.
Well, plus all calls are good calls. We want to make sure everybody calls in every Sunday from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Against the Grain with T.O. Mr. Ceasefire Hardeman and Raza Siddiqui right here on Progressive Radio 820 a.m. WCPT Radio. All right, we want you to call in, share all this information. I think we had a very lively discussion today, Brother Raza.
No, I absolutely agree, and I'd like to remind our listeners that you can also view our video streams, and if anyone's interested in hearing this discussion and they weren't able to join us live, they can do so at our Facebook page, Against the Grain with T.O. Hardeman and Raza Siddiqui. So we're on 24/7 there as well,
yes.
So we can continue this conversation there. Comment, and we'll bring that up on future shows as well. In the meantime, this is Raza Siddiqui and Mr. Ceasefire Hardeman signing out Against the Grain.
Thank you.